帮你下车。
好。The vast majority of people in this room know someone who has been harassed. Since Taiwan's Me Too movement, more and more people have joined her workshop, including men.A new generation of progressive-minded people are attempting to change the traditions of Taiwan's patriarchal society.
For the longest time, we've believed we have to respect or obey men who are in higher positions or have a higher social status. The idea of obeying men to a lot of Asian women seems a virtue that women should have. So when things like this happen, a lot of women don't know it's their right and interest to fight for it.
At more than 40%, Taiwan's parliament has the highest proportion of female lawmakers in Asia. Fan Yun is one of them. In August, she helped strengthen a law on sexual harassment. But the politician warns significant change will take much more time.
Take me as an example. I have encountered verbal and physical sexual harassment from a legislator from another party. After 3 years of efforts,I won the case in civil court, in criminal courts, and in the administrative body. And the party he belongs to still refuses to acknowledge the fact that he is an oppressor. And his party still nominates this court-certified sexual offender.
These students hope the social movement won't lose steam, especially now that there are survivors speaking out about their experiences on the streets and not just online.
What we need the most right now is the ability to empathize with victims of sexual harassment. Because we still see people on the internet questioning whatever victims say.
If you are against any form of equity, you are against democracy. Taiwan has always been proud to claim that it's a democratic, progressive country. And now we need to embody what that truly means.
Fan Yun is here to show her support. 2 months ahead of the presidential election, she thinks that the majority of political parties aren't taking the issue seriously.
For an event, TPP hired female actors to dress up like flight attendants wearing sexy outfits. The event objectified women, and flight attendant unions also expressed their discontent. However, even with the backlash,TPP didn't apologize. The candidate's approval from female voters has dropped since this controversial event.
One presidential hopeful announced that he would pick an actor as his running mate. She is a lead character in the hit TV show that helped launch Taiwan's Me Too movement. Political stunt or not, gender equality has now become an issue in this year's campaign.
Time now for French Connections, our weekly look at the intricacies of life here in France with Solange Mougin. Solange, great to see you as always. This week you're focusing on an emblem of French culture, the pastry.
Yeah, we all need a little bit of sweetness with the world as it is today. So I brought us some treats, Delano, to taste at the end of the show. But first, let's talk about their creator. Nina Metayer, she received in October 2023 the honor of best pastry chef in the world, discerned by the International Union of Bakers and Confectioners. The honor has allowed the 35-year-old to break a glass ceiling. She is the first woman in the organization's nearly 100-year-old history to receive the honor, and she's pretty passionate about her profession.
Ça a été très compliqué de rentrer dans ce métier-là en tant que femme il y a 17 ans, et maintenant c'est une consécration énorme. Enfin, c'est un honneur pour moi de représenter le métier mondialement.
Now, Solange Metayer has joined an exclusive club of French pastry chefs, hasn't she?
She has. Beyond the century-old tradition of pastry in France, the current concept of high-end desserts, or haute pâtisserie, was spearheaded actually by Pierre Hermé in the early 2000s, when he decided to make collections like in the fashion industry.
Je cuisine avant tout dans ma tête. Ça veut dire aussi que j'ai une certaine connaissance des techniques qui me permet d'imaginer les proportions d'une recette, qui me permet de me projeter dans le goût de ce que j'ai envie de faire. Après, ce qui compte, c'est quand je goûte, c'est est-ce que c'est bon ?
Now, social media and TV shows have created a celebritification of chefs. And one of the biggest star bakers is Cédric Grolet, with over 8 million followers online.
I look at his Insta stories.
Yeah, it's quite beautiful. His boutiques have lines around the block for his beautiful, expensive trompe-l'œil pastries.
Les gens, ils vont se déplacer, et si c'est beau, ils vont venir, et si c'est bon, ils vont revenir.
Dès qu'ils postent, ça marche vraiment, mais deux, trois fois plus. Hein.
Social media has opened a global door to French luxury pastry for tourists and for locals alike.
Même s'il faut attendre 3 heures, eh bien, il n'y a pas de souci, j'attendrai 3 heures.
It's very famous in Japan, so and very popular, so I want to buy in Paris.
So Solange, does France have an edge over other countries?
Well, France definitely has a rich history and a diversity of desserts. But another top chef and TV star, Christophe Michalak, tells us that the baking world is very, very competitive.
On a une richesse historique et gastronomique qui est sans égale. Donc c'est peut-être pour ça que la pâtisserie française brille à travers le monde, et c'est génial. Après, il ne faut pas se faire doubler, parce qu'il y a des très bons confrères dans tous les pays du monde et le niveau devient de plus en plus élevé. Il n'y a pas une cuisine qui domine le monde. Par contre, il n'y a qu'une seule pâtisserie.
Now, many signature pastries rely on a dough batter called a pâte à choux. It is our word of the day. This mixture of hot water, flour, eggs is used in many desserts like eclairs and croquembouches, those towering traditional wedding cakes. Now, why is it called pâte à choux? Well, the word literally means little cabbage pastry, but it's not because it's piped out in a round, cute little cabbage shape. Rather, the pastry, with its first mentions dating back to the 13th century, is made over heat, or chaud. And over time, that word chaud morphed into choux. Today, it is still a cornerstone of many desserts that send many of us back to childhood.
Quand nous étions jeunes, on mangeait, qu'est-ce qu'il y avait, des choux à la crème, des baba au rhum. C'était la folie de mes parents aussi. Tous les dimanches, on mangeait à millefeuille.
Now, millefeuille desserts are actually the third most loved pastry among French people, after éclairs and religieuses. And the top honor goes to the tarte aux fraises fruit strawberry tarts.
They're delicious, aren't they? Now, Solange, most French people don't have the luxury of buying their desserts at a fancy store. So where do they buy them from?
Well, sometimes supermarkets, but for the most part, bakeries are where they go. There are some 35,000 bakeries in France, and the sector employs 180,000 people. An eighth of those workers are apprentices. Also, many of these jobs, well, they're low paid and have difficult hours. And on top of this, there is also another hidden aspect to this thriving industry. A lot of the pastries in bakeries are actually industrially made, more than you think. They're either bought frozen or as a kit to be assembled.
Vous avez un diplôme?
Ah non, pas du tout. Moi, à la base, j'étais esthéticienne, en fait.
Now, many shops claim, nonetheless, that these pastries are fait maison, or made in-house, when, in fact, they're bought in catalogs. Now, the actual percentage is highly contested. One study claims 50% of them are mass-produced. The real number could likely be much higher. Nonetheless, in this 16 billion euro industry, revenues are split half and half, 8 billion for the artisanal, 8 billion for the industrial. For consumers, one baker tells us how to tell the difference.
Ce qui est très important, c'est la beauté de l'imperfection. Les croissants faits par un artisan, ça ne sera jamais parfait. Vous voyez, celui-là ne ressemble pas à celui-là. On a dû faire les flammes une par une à la poche. En grande distribution, ils ne peuvent pas se permettre de faire ça.
Now, Solange, the pastries may taste delicious, but they're not always good for you, are they?
Yeah, and that's because of sugar.
Damn sugar.
Yeah, sugar. A recent poll found that 3 out of 4 French people actually watch out for the amount of sugar that they consume. So actually, many pastry chefs have adapted their recipes.
Les pâtisseries aujourd'hui, c'est d'enlever du sucre, d'enlever du gras. En 10-12 ans, l'évolution a fait que les gens mangent moins sucré, recherchent moins gras, moins sucré.
So, Delano, are you ready to taste some pastries? Like, yeah, 57% of French people...
This is going to be the best part of my day.
Exactly, me too. 57% of French people buy a pastry every month, so we are going to join into this tradition. What would you like?
Pavlova for you.
And I'm going to try the lemon tart. Bon appétit.
That's it for this edition of French Connections. You can follow other editions on our website, france24.com. That's it for this edition of Live from Paris. From all of us on team, thank you very much for watching.
Join us in Spain for our latest Europe Now program. Now, this country has had more than its fair share of economic shocks, from the financial crisis to the COVID pandemic, and now the inflation crisis. On top of all that, political instability has gripped this country. An election this July failed to give any particular party the required majority, and stalemate has ensued. We talk to some of the political players in this drama, and we also look at levelling up, that's to say efforts to reduce social inequalities in this country of great contrasts.
Europe Now on France 24 and France24.com.
Welcome to our Live from Paris programme. I'm Rochelle Ferguson-Biahi. These are the top stories this hour. In the north of the Gaza Strip, intense fighting continues between Israeli forces and Hamas. Israel says its troops have advanced in the heart of Gaza City. Hamas says its fighters have inflicted heavy losses in street battles. As the civilian death toll mounts in Gaza, 80 countries and organizations gather here in the French capital calling for a ceasefire. The aim of that conference then to coordinate humanitarian aid and help wounded civilians leave the besieged Palestinian enclave. Also coming up, Republican candidates go head-to-head in their third presidential debate of 2023. The Florida event wasn't attended by the former US President Donald Trump, who's currently leading in the polls. All that and plenty more on our Live from Paris show. Our top story this hour then, in the north of the Gaza Strip, intense fighting continues between Israeli forces and Hamas. Israel saying its troops have advanced into the heart of Gaza City. Hamas, meanwhile, saying its fighters have inflicted heavy losses in street battles. Well, the United Nations, meanwhile, has reiterated calls for an urgent ceasefire in Gaza. The Palestinian Health Ministry saying Israeli bombardments have killed 10,569 Gaza residents, 40% of them children. A humanitarian crisis, meanwhile, has gripped the enclave. The basic supplies are rapidly running out. France 24's Camille Knight explains.
Paramedics rush this two-year-old's body to a hospital in the north of Gaza. They try to resuscitate him, but quickly realize it's too late. His parents have just one request.
Please don't put him in the morgue. Let me take him home, and I will bury him tomorrow.
Living in the north of Gaza has become unbearable. Residents bury their loved ones in mass graves as Israel intensifies its ground and air campaign. Thousands have been evacuating to the south, taking the few belongings they can. This man is carrying nothing but a backpack and his baby, born just over a month ago.
We're exhausted. We've been travelling a long way, and we don't know how long we have left to go.
They have no mercy. The children are too tired to keep walking. Some people are carrying their mothers.
Where can we find refuge? It's yet another wave of relocations. It's a new Nakba for the Palestinian people after the one in 1948. Where can we find shelter?
Nakba, meaning catastrophe, is the Arabic term for the expulsion of Palestinians from their territories during the founding of Israel. The Israeli military has told the 1.1 million people living in the north of the Strip to move south, an instruction the UN has said would cause devastating humanitarian consequences. The north may be extremely dangerous, but the south isn't exactly safe. Many of the displaced are staying in camps with little or no access to clean water, food or medicine. The Palestinian Red Crescent says an average of 33 trucks of humanitarian aid enter Gaza every day. That number was close to 500 before the start of the war.
Now, after weeks of its intense bombardment on Gaza, Israel's army has showed journalists what it says are images of weapons seized from Hamas. The military claiming to have destroyed 130 tunnel shafts following Hamas's attack, which killed 1,400 people and saw 240 others taken hostage. The details with France 24 Charlotte Hughes.
Israeli tanks, making their way into the Gaza Strip. Inside the enclave, soldiers begin to search the residential buildings destroyed in the fighting with Hamas militants. Amid the destruction, Israeli soldiers show journalists what the army found in what it says is a Hamas arms factory.
These are all things that were found in the house on the second floor. These are scuba diving equipment. You can see the rockets, the drones. Lots of ammunition. All this was hidden in the house.
Every building is inspected. The military says it has destroyed 130 tunnel shafts and that 33 of its soldiers have been killed since the start of its ground offensive in Gaza on the 27th of October.
People are next to me, we're all afraid, but we keep moving forward, we keep doing the things as we learned for the past 2 years.
These soldiers say they have not seen any civilians where they operated after Israel ordered civilians in northern Gaza to flee south. A move condemned by the UN rights chief.
We're trying not to harm innocent people. We give all the people that live here a good heads up that we're coming, that they need to evacuate till the Gaza Lake, which is going south. So we know that every people that are here are enemy.
However, the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs said hundreds of thousands of people remain in battle zones in northern Gaza. Calls for a ceasefire to protect civilians have built over a month into the war, following the Hamas attacks on October the 7th. But Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has said there will be no ceasefire unless the hostages are freed.
For more on this story, we can cross live to Jerusalem. Iris Makler standing by for us. Iris, with the intense fighting happening north of the Gaza Strip, what are Israel saying that their army's plans are going forward?
What we've heard from the Israeli military is that they have a phase three. They're now in phase two, phase one bombing. Phase two was bringing in ground troops, but it's been a limited ground offensive. And now as they near Shati refugee camp and the hospital, the Shifa hospital, and the area underneath it that they claim is a Hamas command and control center, they would need more troops to take both of those or to clear both of those of tunnels, as they put it. So the question is when to do that. And it's been quite an interesting discussion that I've had and heard from Israeli military analysts who are saying that would mean more men, more Israeli troops in the Gaza Strip. And there's a consideration about whether to do that now, because the hostage negotiations, the negotiations for a release of some hostages are quite serious. You can't have put more people in, put more men in with all that that implies, and then have a 3-day ceasefire in the middle of that. And that's the first indication, a backwards confirmation, if you like, that I've had that the hostage negotiations this time round for some kind of deal really are serious.
I mean, Iris, if we stay with that, speaking on the condition of anonymity, apparently a UN official plus a Western diplomat have alluded to what you're saying there, potentially a temporary humanitarian ceasefire in Gaza in exchange for the release of hostages. I mean, how much more do we know about that at this stage?
What we know is what's been emerging in the past 2 days. It began with the Arab language media because the source was meant to be either someone close to Egypt or someone close to Hamas, or perhaps both. And then it spread more widely. So I can tell you what's being reported. I do stress that at the moment it's only speculation with that kind of confirmation that we've had from Israeli military analysts. What's being suggested is this. There will be between 10 and 15 hostages released. The number generally agreed upon is 12. Six of them American, six, we don't know what nationality they are, and they will be released in return for a 2 to 3 day ceasefire and or some fuel being allowed into the Gaza Strip. Those are the terms that are being discussed. When it would happen, how it would happen, would it be simultaneous? We don't know any of that. And I have to stress that Israeli sources have said up until now, every official we hear says there'll be no ceasefire until there's a release of hostages. I think they were talking about a broader release, but I can't see them. I guess the question is, will a release of 12 hostages be enough for a 2 to 3 day ceasefire? So all those questions up in the air right now, but that's what's being reported broadly here.
All right, Iris in Jerusalem for us. Thanks very much indeed. Well, in the meantime, the Palestinian Health Ministry says six Palestinians have been killed during an Israeli raid on Jenin in the north of the occupied West Bank. Since the beginning of the Israel-Hamas war, 150 Palestinians have been killed in clashes with Israeli forces in the West Bank. 1,000 others have been arrested. Israel says most were affiliated with Hamas. The US has launched an airstrike on a weapons warehouse in eastern Syria, reportedly used by Iranian-backed militia. The Pentagon saying the multiple bombs were dropped on the facility in Deir el-Zor in retaliation for increased attacks on US bases in the region. The US officials said the precision strike was deliberate and designed not to escalate the conflict in the region. Now, here in Paris this Thursday, 80 countries and organisations have gathered to call for an urgent ceasefire in Gaza. The French President Emmanuel Macron urging nations to work towards that truce, saying they need to coordinate humanitarian aid and help wounded civilians escape the besieged enclave is urgent. Well, the UNRWA chief, Philippe Lazzarini, expressed concerns about the spillover risk of the situation in Gaza. Israel has stayed away from the talks, as have Iran and Russia.
Les civils doivent être protégés.
The civilian population has to be protected. It is absolutely essential. And this is non-negotiable. This is an immediate need in the longer term, and it will be a condition, a prerequisite to ensure that against the fight, for the fight against terrorism. Today, the situation is extremely serious and is getting worse every day. In the immediate future, we have to work on civilian protection. For that, we need a very quick humanitarian pause or break, and we have to work towards a ceasefire.
The volume of aid coming in through Rafah blatantly is inadequate. All crossings should be open, in particular crossing points with Israel like Kerem Shalom. But humanitarian aid alone will not cover the needs of people in Gaza. It must be complemented by the private sector and the restoration of municipal services like water and waste management.
Well, for more on that conference, calling for a ceasefire in Gaza, France 24's Clovis Casali is there.
This aid conference at the Élysée Palace was, of course, an initiative of French President Emmanuel Macron. And in his opening remarks, he said that the international community needs to work towards a ceasefire. The word is said, and that humanitarian pauses are necessary very quickly in order to bring the much needed help to those 2 million civilians currently trapped in the Gaza Strip. He said Israel has the right to defend itself after the terrorist attack of Hamas, but also has the duty to protect civilians. All lives are equal and civilians need to be protected. Emmanuel Macron is saying also